This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest. I'm Sumitra Selvaraj. Joining me in the studio today is Limsu Ann and Sharmila Ganesan. Sharmila is at the helm of our social media today.
Yes, and we are asking you, firstly, very exciting news. Silat was just inscribed onto the UNESCO Intangible Heritage List. So what other Malaysian traditions should be included on this list? At the moment, at 37%, wow making and flying is leading, followed by pantun. 20% of you voted for that. 24% of you voted for Dikir Barat, so that's second.
Right.
20% voted for pantun and 19% voted for hawker culture.
That's what I voted for. can we step up the votes on that before the Singaporeans take it away from us?
So you can also tell us if you think something else belongs on this list. You can continue taking that poll, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or call us at 03-7733-2900.
And so being on that list as an intangible culture heritage is actually what Silat, date palms and Thai massage have in common.
Ooh, well, that's quite a varied list there.
It is. So it was quite an exciting morning, I would have to say, when I found out that Silat made the list. It is only the third from Malaysia to be recognised as an intangible cultural heritage. The first was Mak Yong Theatre in 2008, Dondang Sayang last year in 2018.
Mm. So all three of these practices are inscribed on the representative list of the Intangible Cultural Heritage of Humanity. But there is a separate list for intangible cultural heritage in need of urgent safeguarding, which is a shorter list of cultural elements that require urgent action to keep them alive, right?
Mm. So a bit of background on these lists, though they were established back in 2008 when the 2003 Convention for the Safeguarding of Intangible Cultural Heritage took effect. Mm. And the idea of having these lists is really to ensure better protection of important intangible cultural heritages worldwide. And with that, also to increase awareness of their cultural significance. And I suppose intangible basically means it's not a place or it's not an object necessarily, but it's they're, as we said earlier, I mean, if you just look at Thai massage or date palms,
a practice,
an element of a culture, so intangible. There's not a specific thing that you can point to, but it's a sort of a very important part of someone's culture.
And perhaps not necessarily tagged to a specific area either.
No. And there is a criteria for that.
Okay. Yeah. So the Intergovernmental Committee for the Safeguarding of Intangible Cultural Heritage is responsible to oversee the implementation of the convention. And they're currently meeting for their 14th session in Bogota, Colombia. The 6-day meeting is ongoing until tomorrow, the 14th of December, during which they have announced several cultural elements that have made it to both lists. And actually, it's the first time that the committee is meeting in Latin America and the Caribbean.
And so, and you were talking about what makes it intangible, right? So there is criteria that has to be fulfilled for an element to make it to the representative list. And that responsibility lies with the state that's submitting it. So whether you are one state or you're doing a joint submission with multiple states. So first of all, and this is according to the 2003 convention, they refer to intangible cultural heritage as something meaning the practices, representations, expressions, knowledge, skills that communities, groups, or even in some cases individuals may recognize as part of their cultural heritage. So they also mentioned that this must be something that you've seen passed down from generation to generation. So there is a sense of time there. And it has to also have that sense of identity and community. So it's not just something that many people practice, but without something tying it all together. And so and they also further break it down into examples of how these elements can emerge as, right? So it could be oral traditions and expressions. It could be performing arts or social practices, rituals and festive events. It could also be knowledge and practices concerning nature and the universe, or also traditional craftsmanship.
That's quite a sort of large umbrella there, other criteria to make the list includes ensuring visibility and awareness of it, therefore encouraging dialogue around it. And the proposing country must also include safeguarding measures to protect and promote this particular element, as well as nominated with the widest possible participation and consent of that particular community, group or individuals associated with that element.
I wonder whether they also handle disputes, like if somebody nominates a particular cultural practice, is that time for another party to dispute and say, well, no, they shouldn't be nominating it?
I didn't see anything about that, but that is quite a curious thing, right? But then there are a lot of nominations that have been made jointly. So with, I think some were made, for example, with 14 other countries as well. So I don't think there's a limit on how many you can, because I guess there are certain traditional cultures that are tied to a region in particular and not necessarily a country, right? Mm. And I think Malaysia as well tried to nominate the hawker culture with Singapore.
Yes. And I think even with Silat, actually, Malaysia initially tried to do a joint nomination with Indonesia, but Indonesia chose to do it separately.
There are different forms.
So then we nominated them separately. And so I think the dispute aspect, possibly because it's a state nominated, so whatever dispute would have been settled internally before the country puts something forward.
And before we go back to Silat itself, I do want to make that distinction that we are talking about Malaysia's nomination of Silat, because at the same time, like you said, Chamna, we tried to nominate it together, but that didn't work out. So Indonesia did nominate their own traditions of Pencak Silat, and that also actually got recognition on the list, and that caused quite a bit of confusion for me this morning, because is this Malaysia? Is this Indonesia?
Yeah. I'm sure that their version of it is perfectly valid and wonderful. But, you know, as a Malaysian broadcaster, we should be highlighting the Malaysian version of Silat.
Well, so that nomination was filed last year by the National Heritage Department, and that was together with Persatuan Dunia Seni Silat Melayu Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And so now with that really exciting news about Silat being inscribed as an intangible cultural heritage.
I knew you had this hidden passion for Silat, Suan.
I think it's just very exciting to have something Malaysian up there as a UNESCO heritage, right? And so this morning I caught up with Muhammad Nazrin Wahab. He's the former editor of Seni Bela Diri, Malaysia's only martial arts magazine, and is currently also a lecturer on Silat Melayu culture for Museum Negara. So he started our conversation with a brief explainer on Silat in Malaysia.
Silat in Malaysia is generally categorized as a martial art that's indigenous, it's traditional. It comes from the thinking, from the practices, from the culture of the local Malays. And as I think everyone understands that when we try to define what is Malay culture, we find many, many different definitions, because there's so many different ways, there's so many different ethnicities within the region. Mm-hmm. So you find that there's a lot of differences, but there's also a lot of similarities. People from outside the region, when they look at us, they see, it looks all the same. But practitioners, they know that there's a difference between one Silat style and another. And they know this because of the history of each style. Some styles come from villages. Some styles come from the palaces. Mm-hmm. Some styles were actually used in combat a long, long time ago and have survived to this day. Some styles have become more philosophical, more wellness, more health-oriented. So when we talk about martial arts, typically most martial artists or most teachers will say there is no difference between one martial and another, because it's a human being with two legs, two hands, one head. We are practicing based on what our body can do. But traditional Silat in Malaysia is deeply rooted in the beliefs, in the narrative, in the culture of the local Malays. So you'll find that a lot of the local Malay adages, the idioms, the proverbs tie in quite a lot to what Silat is. It is a traditional martial art. It contains almost every move you can think of. Mm-hmm. In fact, a lot of foreigners, a lot of people outside of Malaysia, they look at Silat as a very complete martial art. Not my words, right? There are researchers who said that Silat is one of the most deadly martial arts in the world. That, of course, is true from the warring background that we've had long, long time ago. Today, what we use it for is usually for self-development, character development, and self-defense. We no longer have the military aspect where we all work together to defend in excursions, but we have individual self-defense right now. So martial arts, as around the world, as with everything around the world, Silat has also progressed to more individual development right now.
Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on actually now UNESCO recognizing Silat as an intangible cultural heritage? Why is this significant?
I am happy. I mean, I'm giddy with excitement. Our WhatsApp groups have been blowing up. We've been talking about this. It's not a end. It's sort of a beginning, because a lot of us have been fighting for this for many, many years. From my point of view, it is one step on the journey. recognition by other people is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to recognize, you yourself, your own people need to recognize the importance to your own culture, to your own history, and where, how are you going to take this forward? What will Silat be in the future, in a future where, you know, there are no wars or there's less wars? What will that look like? So my perspective is, thank you very much for the recognition. I believe it provides a good boost to our energy, our spirit to keep going, to keep practicing. At the same time, I think this is a good opportunity to be able to spread awareness about Silat, because apparently not everybody knows what it is.
Mm-hmm.
There have been instances online recently where our Minister of Education proposed to have Silat as a co-curricular activity. And we got two kind of responses, right? One response was, I thought Silat was already in schools and universities, because when I was young, that was the case. What has happened? So,
right.
So we got that kind of response. We also got a kind of response, why Silat? Why not anything else? So I hope this serves as that point where, instead of replying or reacting with hatred or saying, no, you're wrong, we actually say, okay, we have this recognition. Let me explain to you what Silat means to me and how it's helped me in my life and how it's helped my family and how it's actually helped my career. So you find quite a lot of Silat people have gained high positions based on the education that they've had in their martial arts. And this is true of all martial arts. I'm not rounding out just Silat is more important than others. I believe that, and I have friends who are in such positions because of the foundations that they've had in martial arts, which primarily promotes peace above conflict. So for the recognition, I congratulate the Malaysian government. I congratulate the delegate, Pusaka especially, the National Silat Association, for bringing this to fore. There's still a lot of work to be done, but this is a good start.
Mm-hmm. And from a wider perspective, right, is it so? Mm-hmm. Do you find that important that we recognise different aspects of Malaysian cultural heritage as an intangible cultural heritage?
Definitely. I agree with that, primarily because Silat itself, if you recognise Silat, you automatically recognise quite a lot of other things that are appendage to Silat,
mm-hmm.
which is what many people don't know. If you study Silat, you have, I like to introduce Silat to people as a nexus of Malay culture. So when people ask me about things like dress, Malay dress, about Malay customs, about Malay manners, I usually point to Silat, because out of all the many intangible heritage, I don't know if you call it that,
mm-hmm.
Silat is the only one left that actually has a master-student structure, a very strong master-student structure. So mm-hmm. a lot of it is preserved. If you look at other things like, say, Wau Bulan, you look at other things like Gasing, they don't have associations, as many associations as we do, they don't have as a strong a hierarchy like that. So a lot of our culture in Silat is documented. And because Silat people love to do many Malay things as well,
mm-hmm.
a lot of those get documented as well. Music, dress, strategies, thinking. We talk about adat dan adat, which is manners. We talk about religion. We talk a lot of other things that actually Silat is a nexus of. So it's a good starting point.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there on, you can start moving to others.
Right. Okay. So Silat is sort of like the center of it. And then from there, you can explore so much more.
Definitely. It's a good starting point to have if you want to be introduced to Malay culture.
Okay. And as a final question, Ray, what would you like to see perhaps on the list in the future?
Okay. So I am a martial artist, and I would like to share with everyone that, did you know, Malaysia has a lot of martial arts that did not originate in Malaysia, but were developed in Malaysia. So if you go to Penang, a lot of Star Wars fans will know this. Ray Park, the guy who played Darth Maul in The Phantom Menace,
mm-hmm.
actually trained with his Kung Fu teacher in Penang. A lot of people from overseas, when they want to train in Tai Chi, they actually come to Penang. There's a lot of good masters that have left, for example, India and China, and they are actually developing, still continue developing their art over here. And a lot of them have become different from others in the original countries. So I would say that these have become thoroughly Malaysian. I would urge the government to not see them as Chinese arts or Indian arts, as you know, that's where they came from,
mm-hmm.
or what they have become. I would say look for those. There are many of those we have documented. It's just that they need to be highlighted as well.
So that was Muhammad Nazrin Wahab. He's a martial artist and currently a lecturer on Silat Melayu culture for Museum Negara.
He sounds like a fascinating person. Mm. I loved listening to him talk. So much passion in his speech.
Yes, and it's nice to be able to hear topics that we don't usually hear on a regular basis, right? Mm. Always a pleasure to be able to learn something a little bit deeper about Malaysian culture.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So besides Silat, there were lots of other elements that made it to the representative list. Let's take a quick look at some of them. The date palm was recognized. Sorry, I can't help it, that, but the ad is whispering in my ear. The date palm recognized for its centuries-long role in the establishment and growth of civilizations in the hot and dry regions of the Arab world. And this was a joint nomination by 14 countries from the region, where until this day, platters of dates adorn tables in homes and businesses across the Arab world, as the date palm tree has historically symbolized prosperity.
Mm. And food is such an integral part of so many cultures and communities, mm-hmm. right? Another food-related inscription was Mongolia's traditional technique of making airag, mm-hmm. Their fermented mare's milk.
Okay.
And airag is made in Kokur, which is made of cow hide, and all of those associated customs. Airag is a traditional national beverage in Mongolia, and the process of making it requires fresh mare's milk to be churned inside this Kokur. I think I'm saying that right. At least 500 times, with a starter to assist the fermentation.
Wow. Mm. Mm. It's an interesting look into different cultures mm-hmm. that perhaps you didn't know much about before, right?
I had no idea.
Mm. And our neighbour up north as well had their own traditional culture inscribed in the list. So Thailand had its own addition via Nuat Thai, which is the body folding sharp elbow techniques of Thai massage.
Mm-hmm.
So that originated from India, but it has been practiced in Thailand for centuries and centuries. And studies have apparently shown that it can help relieve back pain, headaches, insomnia, and even anxiety in some cases.
Mm. This I'm familiar with. This I know.
So you've not sipped airag, but you've gotten a Thai massage.
Absolutely.
I've had dates. The kind you eat.
Yes. I wasn't going to presume otherwise, Charmila Ganesan.
So I think, you know, this idea of having your cultural heritage recognized is quite exciting for most
people,
right?
I think so,
right?
Yes.
So we had been asking you on Twitter, what other Malaysian traditions should be included in UNESCO's intangible heritage list? And so far, leading the pack is at 43% is wow making and flying.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 22% is Dikir Barat. 18% say it should be Pantun. And 17% say that it should be our hawker culture. But we did get a couple of comments. We got Rebel to Save the Environment saying it should be top spinning or gassing.
Yep.
And Ashraf Mukhtar agrees that it should be Dikir Barat. So yeah, some interesting options there. And I would personally love to see some of these make the list at some point.
Mm. I definitely vote for wow making.
Yeah, very, very unique to Malaysia. Although kite flying mm-hmm. is something that you do see across in various parts of Asia, I actually don't know any anybody else, of course I haven't read up on it, whether anybody else has a kite making kind of tradition that we do, and especially in the forms that the Wau Bulan
and the motifs,
right?
and how those motifs relate to those particular communities and stuff like that. So again, I think it really, because of the criteria of the list, it does depend on the country to also prove that these art forms are being supported, that they're being allowed to flourish. So those are also part of the sort of application process as well.
But it's like you mentioned earlier, right? You mentioned this actually. It's so fluid because a lot of these practices, some of these practices can cross borders.
Yeah, well, Lance actually tweeted us to say, because one of our options was hawker culture, they said hawker culture isn't exclusive to Malaysia, it's an Asian culture.
It is. And likewise with silat or with batik, these are all, I think, for Silat and Batik, very Nusa Tenggara sort of practices, right? And it's difficult to be able to just pinpoint it down to, and I don't think we should.
No, I definitely think it's a strength, right? When you have, like, for example, we look at the date palm, you have 14 different countries jointly submitting a nomination. And I feel like in a way that just gives you the extra strength and support that you need to preserve and promote that particular culture. Because you show that, look, there are so many of us still practicing it today. It is part of our culture. We may be from different countries, different But in the same region, we may have slightly different cultures, but this is something that we all share.
Actually, I'm not a fan of dates myself, but I did have the opportunity to visit Kuwait a couple of years ago, and we went to a souk, which specializes in these sort of selling of dates. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are hundreds of varieties from across the region, and they offer them to you like a cheese tasting. Each one has its different a different property. You know, some are sweet, some, I suppose, kind of similar to how people would kind of classify durians here, according to the flavor profiles. Dates, they take their dates pretty seriously.
And isn't it what I really like, for instance, in this idea of 14 countries presenting one cultural tradition, is this idea that sometimes these shared practices can transcend politics.
Yes.
They can transcend other separations that maybe in modern days separate us. Mm. But when you look back, there are actually these things that unite us, that we have commonalities with others. And there's something quite beautiful about that, isn't there?
It is. We're not as divided as we might look.
One hopes.
And on that positive note, I'm going to wrap up today's Daily Digest. You can look us up on Facebook, the BFM, The Bigger Picture. Drop us a message. Let us know if you like today's show. Let us know if there are any news stories that come springing into your inbox and that you want to share with us. And then we'll happy to do a story on that for you. If you missed any part of the show today, please download the podcast, bfm.my/dailydigest, via the BFM app or on Spotify. This has been the Daily Digest on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.